Oh, I wake up in the morning with my hair down in my eyes, and she says hi. And I stumble to the breakfast table while the kids are going off to school goodbye. And she reaches out and takes my hand, squeezes it, and says,
"How you feeling, huh?"
Oh, yes. And I look across at smiling lips that warm my heart and see my morning sun. And if that's not loving me, then all I gotta say, oh, God didn't make little green apples, and it don't rain in Indianapolis in the summertime.
So who is this doing this?
This is O.C.
There's no such thing as Dr.
O.C.
Disneyland.
Yeah. I got the rest of it.
what is it?
O.C. Smith.
O.C. Smith.
Green apple. Welcome back.
Very gentle. Very gentle.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. I want to thank State Senator LaTanya Johnson for coming and weighing in. And it's Friday, so it's Fridays with Sandy Williams. Sandy, I'm asking you about the debt ceiling. It's everywhere. We've gone through this before. And in the end, they all realize whatever it is we're talking about, we can't allow this to happen. But I was looking at Sandy the other day about discretionary spending and other spending. And when you look at the amount of dollars that are already locked in, that there is no negotiations, that's about 50-some-odd percent.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's
of the budget.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and the portion of the discretionary expenditure that's left to talk about includes some sacred rails.
Yes.
Like the defense, you know?
Yes. Education. I mean, and other things
that
you just can't touch. And then you look at the part that's left that you may be able to dicker with. It's 11 to 15%, and they're talking, and the Republicans want a 47% cut on that 11 to 15%, Sandy, which are some safety net issues.
Yeah, I mean, there's
that's all, you know, people need to understand. This is a knife's edge.
And what's worrisome is that, you know, and we did have our credit rating. The United States credit rating was, in fact, dropped.
Never recovered.
And hasn't been reinstated. So, you know, this is not something that, and it was dropped not because we defaulted, but because we got to the brink of defaulting and we'd gotten into the habit of doing just what we're doing now. And so the financial market said, you know what? This is looking more and more like something that could happen, and because it could happen, we're going to take that into account in our financial rating, and we're going to downgrade you. And now you look at the situation, and you've got Marjorie Taylor Greene and Boebert and even McCarthy himself. There's a bunch of people sitting on one side of this negotiation who seem to be capable of acting less rationally than you would hope would be the case, so that everyone understands that if you had rationality operating on both sides of the table, they would not ultimately allow the federal government to default. But if you have irrationality playing, you know, for instance, Donald Trump on his CNN said, "Yeah, we ought to default. We ought to let America go into default." I mean, that could only be said by someone who's bankrupted a bunch of companies himself. But that kind of talk is enough to reduce the credit rating of the United States. And the kind of brinksmanship that we've gotten into is also that has that tendency and could well happen again. But if we do default, it would be a guaranteed cataclysmic effect on the creditworthiness of our treasury instruments.
You know, Sandy, it's when again people understand that there's only a small percentage that you can even talk about cutting.
Well, what people should understand is that if the reason people are so careful about paying their mortgage obligations is that the effect of not paying the mortgage obligation is to, one, ruin their credit rating so they can't borrow money again, and two, they might lose their house, okay? So the United States defaulting is like not paying your mortgage obligation. It's a big deal, and it's a big deal financially to the United States and to the people of the United States, and we ought not to tinker with this irresponsibly. We ought to recognize that these expenditures and the obligations to pay the debt on them have already been authorized by this Congress. And a Congress that authorizes expenditures and then doesn't authorize funding them is the irresponsible body.
So Sandy, is it safe to say then that this game that Republicans are playing, it's not a game really, that we're gonna drop the line here. This is it. We're going to force these cuts. We don't care about what anybody else says. We're going to do this right now. We've been waiting for the opportunity. This is what the American people want.
Well, the Republican negotiating position would seem to suggest that the reason we're in this position of having to increase the debt ceiling is all the result of profligate spending on the part of on the part of Democrats, not Republicans. But the fact of the matter is that a substantial reason for these this deficit
tax cuts
are tax cuts that have happened in the past, the revenue tax cuts, and the fact that Congress has only in a couple of circumstances over the last 30 years been
frugal
in a position of being unified from in terms of party unification from the presidents down through both houses, and so we've had the capacity for the Congress has not been able to operate lockstep except in very few circumstances, and those circumstances are not the reason why we are currently facing the need to increase the debt ceiling.
Let's go to CJ. Good morning, CJ.
Good morning, Earl and Sandy. Sandy, you were going to do some research for today. And
wait a minute, CJ. Number one, sure. You can't give out assignments, you know, I'm sorry, you just don't have that kind of authority. And so, you know, your thoughts on the debt ceiling.
Well, this was a political ploy because the president, Biden, could have raised the debt ceiling when he had control of the Senate and Congress for 2 years. So this was a political move on his part. These expenditures, Nancy Pelosi got things in each time Trump raised the debt ceiling. He negotiated with Nancy Pelosi each time, and this was during the pandemic. These budgetary numbers are set at pandemic budget numbers. So the president has failed, unlike
let's just get this straight. The budget level is not the problem with the debt ceiling problem. The debt ceiling is the result of cash flow issues within the federal government. How many dollars are coming in the door and how many dollars are going out the door? Just like if you were running a business, it's a cash flow issue, and the cash flow of the United States is what's at stake here. And the fact is that the Congress has not increased the debt limit, except in the circumstance in which the debt limit is being approached. And so, you know, a year ago or 2 years ago, it was not imminent. And so people are not, the Congress has not had, you can go back and look at the history of when the debt limit gets increased. And the debt limit doesn't get increased except essentially on the eve of the requirement that it be increased. And the fact that you say Trump increased the debt limit. No, Congress increased the debt limit, and Trump had to sign the legislation, but Congress did it, and the Congress did it because they responsibly knew that they had to do it. And they did it in spite of the fact that the debt limit was being exceeded in some part because of a tax reduction, which was not necessary at the time to stimulate the economy. It was only necessary to overheat the economy.
And I remember you saying it at that time,
the tax cut was going to increase the deficit.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
I think when we talk about the debt limit, we ought to talk about it responsibly, like we would talk about paying our mortgage, because the debt limit is not being exceeded because of the current budget. The debt limit is being exceeded because of prior authorizations and prior actions on tax cuts. Isn't that correct?
Well, wasn't that done with Nancy Pelosi?
What wasn't done?
During the Trump era, Sandy, you're just getting so many semantics.
No, I'm not in semantics. I'm dealing with facts here. What was done during the Pelosi?
Wasn't it with Nancy Pelosi?
What was done with Nancy Pelosi? The Congress, when the Democrats,
the debt ceiling was raised with Trump, and she got additional.
No, the debt ceiling was raised. The debt ceiling was raised by Congress in order to meet the cash flow requirements of the federal government. The cash flow requirements are the sum total of all of the approvals and all of the actions of the government up to that time. So, the cash flow requirements are the result of tax reductions, tax increases, everything that relates to tax intake. It also relates to the general economy, how much revenue's coming in the door. Are we in recession or not? During the pandemic, we were in recession. We had a reduction in revenues coming in the door. We also had an increase in expenditures in order to deal with the pandemic. But I mean, it's not simple, CJ, and the fact is that it's all about prior obligations. It's not about future expenditures.
That both Democrats and Republicans agreed to.
Yes. It was agreed to by the both houses of Congress and the presidents of the United States in the history.
All right, got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be back. Feeling low, I think about her face, a glow will ease my
mind. Think about her face, a glow will ease my mind.
You're nobody till somebody loves you. You're nobody till somebody cares.
Where's Jerry?
You may be king, you may possess
the world. Is this Dean
Martin? Yeah, and it's gold, but gold won't bring you.
You said Jerry. You're talking about Jerry Lewis.
No, I know. I mean, where's Jerry?
Oh, right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number, Sandy. They'll never guess what I'm going to be playing, right? It's Friday. It means Fridays with Sandy Williams. Let's go to Wisco Paul. Good morning to you, Wisco Paul. Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. You and Sandy do a great job together. It's simple from the fact you've already spent this money, so you got to pay your bills. And if you want to look at the deficit going forward from this point, yes, that's okay. But everything you spent up to this point is already approved and voted on by both Democrats and Republicans. So really, if you look at this situation, you probably shouldn't even have a debt limit in this country. It may be, I don't know, can you say it's archaic at the best? So the Republicans are totally in the wrong on this. That's just my opinion.
That's what we do here.
Well, in fact, Wisco, Paul, the 14th Amendment would seem to have language that would suggest that when Congress authorizes expenditures, ipso facto, they have authorized the entering into the debts necessary to meet them, because it provides that the federal government shall never repudiate its obligations. And so that's essentially what would be happening by refusing to increase the debt limit to meet the cash flow obligations of the government. And so there have been more recently people pointing at the 14th Amendment and saying maybe this whole debt limit conversation is basically an exercise in unconstitutional discussion.
Wisco Paul, thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Lee from Hartford. Hey, good morning to you, Lee. How you doing? You say what, sir?
Good morning, guys. Hey, you had a caller a couple minutes ago. I totally agree with him. The Democrats and the liberal rhinos are totally delinquent in their actions financially. They don't understand finances, and they have no respect for finances.
Republicans do, though, right?
The rhinos do. Well, the Republicans, for the most part, they do, and the real hardcore ones that you often badmouth.
Well, let me ask you a question. The tax cut that was enacted during the Trump administration, you would agree that at the time of that enactment, the economy was essentially hot. We were in a booming economy. And so the tax cut was needed for which reasons? And would you also agree that that tax cut was substantial enough, and that ever since then, the deficits have been increased because of the tax cut?
Crickets. Let's go to David from Estero. Never heard of Estero. Where's Estero?
Next to Fort Myers.
In Florida.
Ah.
All right. What's going on, man? How you doing?
All right. Anyway, as far as to answer the last question, so the way I look at it is this. Yes, we had a very strong economy, and yes, we did have a tax cut. And if you remember, on a more localized level, Wisconsin did the same thing. We had lower taxes, and everybody was worried, oh, my God, we're going to lose all this tax revenue. As a consequence, Wisconsin became more attractive to lure more business into the state, and today we have a huge surplus. We have a $7 billion surplus. If you remember, like I said, when Walker did the tax cuts, the world was going to fall apart without the extra revenue that we were supposedly going to lose. In turn, it actually stimulated more revenue, even though the tax rate was lowered. The same thing applied up until COVID. If you remember, Sandy, there was businesses were expanding, things were running. Yes, they were. It was very good. He just ramped it up even more because, at that time, keep in mind, since 1960, and this can be easily looked at, we have raised the debt limit 78 times since 1960. And eventually, what keeps happening, this is where Sandy and I disagree fundamentally. By raising the debt ceiling every single time and we're spending more money, we are devaluing our money by putting more money into circulation. That's a fact. That's economics 101. And unfortunately, what we're seeing now is the difference is that interest rates are much higher than what they were a few years ago, and now we're paying exponentially much more money onto the interest and the debt. And that's going to start eating up more and more of the budget. So we are technically borrowing more money. It's like taking out a credit card, and you're essentially saying, hey, let's just raise it more. We'll pay you back
later. Listen, we've got to go to a break. So hold the thought. Lee, Tom, and others, we'll be right back. Be right back.
Gotta be me.
You know that one, Sandy?
I want to live.
I'm trying to think who this guy is. I know who this guy is, but it's not, and it's not
Rat Pack.
It's not Frank Sinatra.
And I won't give up this dream of life that keeps me alive.
There was only, what, four or five of them.
Well, Sammy D.
There you go.
All right. Sammy, okay.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. You know, their voices sounded, kind of a little like, All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Sandy, you want to respond to Dave before we
just
go
a
back
little
to
bit
the phone
because
line?
He had a bunch of economic truisms that didn't necessarily relate to the facts. One, what we're talking about here is defaulting on a debt. So the reason for why we might have why we might do that is really extraneous to the question of whether we should. Number one. Number two. With respect to the tax cut issue, the Trump tax cut, and trying to compare it to the Scott Walker tax cut, and trying to suggest that the Scott Walker tax cut is the reason for the current surplus. Number one, Scott Walker was able to enact the tax cut because he was in the throes of having a surplus. You can't cut taxes in the state of Wisconsin unless you have enough revenue to still balance the budget after the tax cut. So you can't cut taxes in Wisconsin in advance of the revenue that it might be created by the beneficial aspects of cutting the taxes.
Because you'd create a deficit.
You'd create a deficit, number one. Number two, the extreme surplus that exists right now is at least as much a function of the federal revenue sharing that occurred during the pandemic and all the money that came to the state of Wisconsin as a result of that as it is out of the activities within the state of Wisconsin. So,
and there's probably a surplus in most states.
Yes. And so we've got, you know, we can try to attribute things to something, but it's a coincidence, not causal. And so there's no question, and no economist would question the fact that the Trump tax cut has increased the size of the deficit since that time. And so that is a truism. And the fact is that that we need to take into account the revenue side as well as the expenditure side when we look at something like the size of the deficit.
All right, let's go to Tom from L.A. Hey, Tom, thank you very much for the call. You say what?
First off, we the people ultimately are the government, and we must wake up and remember this. Second, we need to get money out of politics. It's the biggest issue that's out there. And ever since Citizens United, this country is just going downhill fast. These Republicans are just absolutely insane. They are the most hypocritical people on the planet. Sandy, you may know about Jude Winninski back in 1976. If not, please Google the two Santa Claus theory, because that's exactly what the Republicans are doing. When they get into office, they spend like drunken sailors. They give a tax cut, which, of course, is to the most wealthy people that are out there the most. And, yeah, that gives a little bit of a sugar high to our economy. But then when the Democrats get into power, they just yell and scream about the debt. Because for years, the Democrats were the Santa Claus. They gave Social Security. They gave Medicare. They were the ones that actually brought things to we the people and not just to the uber rich. And the Republicans wanted to figure out a way that they could be Santa Claus. So they became the tax cut Santa Claus. And I just really, this is a strategy. This is a strategy because the Republicans got tired back in the 70s of losing every election, because the Democrats were actually doing things for the middle class and for the regular, Tom, Dick, and Jane that are out there. So I really would like for you guys to continue. Please look up Jude Winninski's theory of the two Santa Claus theory and continue to talk to the people about this, because this is a strategy. Also, I do want to give some good news. Gay men are able to now give blood, which in the past they were not. So FDA finally came to their senses and realized that our blood is actually needed. And I just wanted to throw that in there. Some good news that the government does work. and that
so Tom, that is actually good news, since only 3% of the American people donate blood.
I know I'm donating blood now because I haven't been able to for 20 years.
Hey, well, that's great news, man. It really is. Thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Lee from Hartford. Lee?
Okay, sorry about that. I was on the road and I lost service.
Okay.
But I think you guys are either you don't know economics at all or you are just disingenuous.
Okay, go ahead. We're disingenuous.
But besides that, just a quick history lesson. Is that when Trump faced the liberal House over the same issue a number of years ago, he wasn't going to give in. He was going to hold them accountable. But what happened is the heartless Democrats didn't care who weren't getting paid. They didn't care that people weren't getting their money. Trump at least had a heart. And I don't remember how many days it went on, but finally he said, you know what, people aren't getting paid. He didn't want to give in, but he gave in. Because he has a heart for people. And Biden is just as heartless and icy and cold as Pelosi was. So that's what happened. Trump knew that people needed to get paid. He didn't want to raise the debt limit, but he gave in. That's what happened. It was a standoff. And he actually, a compassionate man, actually gave in. That's all I wanted to say. Have a good day, you guys.
All right. Sandy, you want to?
I'm breathless, actually. wow.
Well, and the worst part about it is
interesting.
He believes it.
Well, I know, but I mean, history revised can be anything we want it to be. And there you go. That's all I can say. You know, the notion that the debt limit was increased by Trump, when Congress enacts the debt limit increases and the president signs them or not as he sees fit. So I'm just I'm without comment. And I'll go back and retake my economic courses, see if I can't get back on the right page.
Well, Sandy, again, the young man really believes that, and he really believes that Trump is this guy who really cares. The same guy that I saw the other day, Wednesday. That's the same guy who talked about grabbing women by their. As a compassionate man.
Well,
you know
I think the main point is the first one you make is that the caller
believes
that. And what's important is to understand that. And I'm not criticizing him for believing it. I'm just simply suggesting that it's divorced from a reality. And we all ought to figure out how we get centered back on realities. I mean, I try to be as nonpartisan as possible and to look at just facts and policies. And just that notion that he described just defies the reality. So that's all I'll say.
So let me ask you, Sandy, how much – so the dollars that come from the federal government to the states, that's all included – that's not included in the budget, is it?
What I'm sorry.
I mean, the federal dollars that come from the federal government
back
that
to
go
the
to the states.
Not included in what budget? The federal budget?
Yes.
Oh, yes, it is. Sure it is. The federal budget accounts for all of the revenue that flows into the government. It then gets expended pursuant to the budget. And the budget includes non-discretionary expenditures as well as discretionary expenditures.
So then it's safe to say then that if those state dollars, federal dollars that are earmarked for the state, if in fact the federal government defaults, it impacts what comes back to the states?
Well,
are those dollars already locked in?
The defaulting is on any expenditure. The government can decide which expenditures it will default on, right? And it has.
Oh, it can.
Well, sure. I mean, it has the capacity to figure out whether it's simply. Let's say that the government is 10% short on cash requirements. It could decide that it's going to pay 90% of all its bills, or it could decide which bills it's not going to pay.
Yeah.
Just like any debtor has to figure out what bills am I going to pay. I don't have enough. I got to figure out which ones I'll pay and which ones I won't pay. But that process, some of those expenditures are more automatic than others and can't be suspended without an act of Congress. So, you know, you've got the problem. You've got it. You've got an executive office that can make determinations on the fly about how they expend money, and you've got the Treasury Department. But it gets complicated. Janet Yellen, the Treasury Secretary, is going to have to decide, if there was a default, just how she distributes the pain of the default. So, under the things that she has discretion to decide about.
So it sounds to me like you're really not concerned. You think this is going to be worked out.
Well, no, I'm concerned because we don't have rationality necessarily sitting on both sides of the table. But the notion that it wouldn't get worked out is
inconceivable
and unthinkable. So is it going to get worked out? I certainly think so. I would think that there's every private interest in Washington would want it to get worked out as well. Nobody has an interest in the federal government defaulting, not any of the dark money. You know, nobody has an interest in having it default.
And my last thing on this, Sandy, is you thought maybe Mitch McConnell would come in with some sound reasoning, and so did President Biden. He thought that maybe this might be, let's bring Mitch McConnell in it, and we'll have some veteran guy who can get McCarthy to understand the impact of what we're talking about. And yet he comes back in, Mitch McConnell, and he's, well, I'm supporting the Congress. Your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, when you're in a negotiation, it's a blink contest, right? So you have to pretend that you're going to stick to your guns and do exactly what you say you're going to do. And then the question is, how close to the brink? It's like the game of you drive your cars at one another.
Yeah.
See who turns and who doesn't, you know? And so, you know, that game typically involves someone either slamming on the brakes or averting at the last minute the crash that would otherwise kill both participants. But this is a negotiation. It has to, both sides have to pretend that they're going to stick to their guns. The question is whether they're pretending or really going to do it.
All right. It's, Maggie Dawn, the Dawn of Resistance, Milwaukee County Corporate Counsel. Good morning to you, Maggie. How you doing? Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Good morning, gentlemen. I just wanted to also...
Go ahead.
Hi, Sandy. Nice to talk to you. One of the other things I wanted to throw out there as the reason why Wisconsin is sitting on such an enormous surplus, and I think it is just on a scale basis relative to its annual budgets, a bit larger than what you see in other states. And one of the big reasons why is that local governments, including the city of Milwaukee and Milwaukee County, have over the year 2000 baseline, returned huge amounts of increased tax dollars to the state. So the taxes are collected, sent to the state, they go into the general fund, the state budgets them. And various estimates by the Wisconsin Policy Forum put that increase in revenue coming out of southeastern Wisconsin from the county and the city of Milwaukee, as well as some of our other municipalities, since 2000, that increase, at about $6 billion. The number's somewhat familiar, right? So I think that's an important part of this story, and it's why we know that the shared revenue formulas are broken here in the state of Wisconsin. We're creating lots of wealth for the state, and that wealth is being shared inequitably and also not enough with municipalities and counties throughout the state. Thanks much for taking my call.
So hang on, Maggie. Okay, all right. You want to respond to that?
No. It sounds like she's absolutely right. And it is true that southeast Wisconsin has experienced an improvement in business climate and business activity and taxes paid. Some of that has to do with the troubles in Illinois, right? And the movement of Illinois businesses into southeast Wisconsin at a rapid clip. And she's good to point out that this began in 2000 under the period of Governor Doyle's governorship. And so, Wisconsin has been on a business resurgent, and it was that resurgence that allowed Walker to actually reduce taxes.
Are you sure it wasn't when Scott Walker was the video of him Wisconsin is open for business. Are you sure that's not when it?
Oh, probably that is.
That had some impact. In...
Yeah, my mistake.
You know, it is. It is kind of, you know. So, but what are they, I mean, they've got this $6 billion. And you can only spend it on what? I mean, it's.
Well, a surplus is in the state coffers to be determined. The expenditures of it are to be determined by the state. And so that's why we're waiting on it, because the state has been paralyzed and unable to figure out what they want to do with it. I do think they should be careful with it. If a surplus is, because of what I said before, states have to have balanced budgets. We can't have even a rainy day fund under our Constitution. And so, you know, you want to make sure that it's expended in a way that doesn't ratchet up the level of costs in the state beyond what we could expect to realize in revenue during a recession.
And so that 2 years from now, you don't turn around and have a deficit.
Right, exactly.
We've seen that happen before.
Right.
When
so, I mean,
given tax dollars back one
sure.
year.
But it ought to be expended in manners that are investments in the future. And there are plenty of ways to do that. And I'm surprised and concerned that our legislature won't do it.
All right. We'll be right back. So...
Oh, 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 cantare. Oh, 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 let's fly way up to the clouds, away from the maddening crowds. We can sing in the glow of a star that I know of, where lovers enjoy peace of mind. Let us leave the confusion and all this illusion behind. Just like birds of a feather, a rainbow together we'll find. Volare, oh, oh.
See, he's got all the words right. All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. You know, Sandy, before we go to Ukraine, and let me catch my breath.
Yeah.
To Ukraine and Russia, I want to, the 2024 Republican convention is coming to the city of Milwaukee with great fanfare. There are people who seem to believe that a lot of money is going to be left in the coffers of the city of Milwaukee because this great convention is coming.
I think the experience of most cities with conventions is it costs money and they don't make money. Okay, all these people come to town, and it might be that some hotels and restaurateurs make money, but the municipalities experience very substantial costs, lots of extra police, extra security.
Garbage collection.
All kinds of extra costs are incurred at the municipal level. So basically, you know, to the extent that there would be extra revenue, it would be derived at the state level with state sales tax. I mean, there is a bit of the sales tax that stays locally, I think, with the hotels and some of the fees, but primarily, and I think that some of the negotiation regarding having the Republican convention come here was a recognition by Republicans that Milwaukee County and the city of Milwaukee would be incurring extra costs that needed to be recognized.
You know, Sandy, and I know I got a buddy who lives in Charlotte, North Carolina. They had the Democratic convention and the Republican convention you know, back to back.
Uh-huh.
And he told me that he lost a lot of money.
Oh, yeah. It's like the Olympics. You know, these things are get a lot of ballyhoo. You get a lot of attention. It's good for the city image. It's good for local restaurants. It's good for local hotels. It's not good for the municipalities. The expenditure level exceeds any kind of benefit they derive. Well, they don't derive benefits. They really, you know, when people come into town, they don't pay money directly to the police department or to the
right.
or the locality. So, yeah, it's an issue, and You know, I think Milwaukee, I think it's good that we're having the convention. It'll be good for Milwaukee. It'll be good for business in Milwaukee. But it's not a moneymaker for the municipality.
So we've got something coming up. It's a pre kind of convention thing with the Republicans in a matter of months. What is that called?
I don't know, but they do this in advance of their conventions to sort of, it's a walkthrough.
Yeah, they're gonna bring a lot of people.
Right,
in.
But they do it to test the capacity and resources, I think. And I can't tell you what it's called.
Yeah. So yeah. Anyway, just that's on the docket, and soon we'll find out. But Sandy, I want to go now to a subject you and I haven't spent a lot of time talking about the last several times that we've been on, and that's Ukraine and Russia. Has it settled down?
No, I don't think it's settled down. I just think it's been the news has not changed, and so the news circuit has not been providing a lot of attention to it. The battles has centered around this place called Bakhmut. It's been a relatively static line, many, many people being killed on both sides, and however the front has only moved hundreds of meters back and forth. So it's much more like what was happening in World War I at the Verdun and places like that, where you had trench warfare. You got trenches dug and static lines occurring. There's apparently offensives that will be coming in the future. There's been talk by Ukraine about a counteroffensive that they'll be waging. But, you know, what you talk about publicly in a war and strategy can be a lot different than what's privately going to happen. I guarantee you that the allied nations were not talking publicly about landing at Normandy before D-Day. So, you know, they were talking about everything else, and they were trying to make everyone believe they were going to do something else and at some other time. So, you know, war is not a time where people want to act predictably.
So nobody's winning, in other words. I mean, it's not a football
it's
game.
Clear
it's
that,
not
yeah,
a basketball
right.
game.
Nobody's winning right now. Nobody's winning. And I suppose the longer it goes on, the more difficult it becomes for Russia, politically internal to Russia. But the same is true for Ukraine. And they're exhausting resources on both sides. They're exhausting manpower in Ukraine more rapidly than they're exhausting it in Russia, because Russia has more people, 142 million to 38 million or something that now remain in Ukraine. So, you know, it's still David versus Goliath in many ways in terms of manpower.
And we're still pouring resources into it. And you would have thought by now, Sandy, that Zelensky or somebody or even Putin would say, hey man, let's go talk.
Well, I think China's playing a role there. I think Zelensky had a conversation with Xi that looked like when you announce that you've had a lengthy and fruitful conversation with someone who's trying to broker a peace, I think you're sending a signal. And I think the same has happened on the other side. My expectation is that China will play an active role in brokering this, and that if this counteroffensive happens, that peace talks would be an outgrowth of that process at some point in the next months. But, you know, the process has not gone as I had thought it might. It didn't, because I did not think that Putin would invade. I thought there would be a negotiation at that point. But I think that the kind of promises that were made to Zelensky in terms of support that would be received by Ukraine prompted them to stonewall discussions at that point, and which prompted Putin to invade. And all of that was contrary to a logic that I was following. And I think going forward, however, that my logic is more likely to occur, and my expectation is that we'd have peace talks by the end of the summer.
All right, got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
No wonder my happy heart sings. Your love has given me wings. Nel blu dipinto de blu. Venite di stare lassù. Nel blu dipinto de blu. Stare lassù. Nel blu dipinto di blu.